on radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, KPP Financial Executive Vice President, Financial Advisor Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Invest Talk. This is our Wednesday, June 17th, 2015 edition of Invest Talk. And whether you're listening online on investtalk.com or on our radio stations in California, or you're a podcast listener and maybe you're listening after hours, we are here to help with any money matters in any way we possibly can. 888-99-CHART is how to connect right now. And Steve is in San Jose, California today, visiting with some of our clients and our meeting with some of our listeners for individual portfolio reviews. And I'll do what I can for this hour to be productive for all of our listeners and give you some good information, some good insight, and answer as many questions as I possibly can. Now, we want to congratulate all the grads. An estimated 1.86 million young men and women are graduating this year from college. And if you're one of them or have one in your household, I have three lessons for you to learn before you start earning a living, which hopefully will begin immediately so you can start paying off all those student loans that I'm sure a lot of you do have and a lot of your family members might have. So lesson number one, don't leave free money on the table. Chances are that your first job will include an employer-sponsored retirement plan like a 401k. And the beauty with these is many employers will match what you put into it. A common limit is a match of 100% of your contributions up to 6% of your salary. Varies between employers, but if you earn $100,000, let's say, obviously that's a big salary for someone coming straight out of college, but you know, it's always easier to use big round numbers. Let's say your employer will match your first $6,000 that you put in. Do not walk away from that deal. It's free money. That's like getting a raise of $6,000 because not only are they paying the $100,000, but you're also putting in $6,000 into your 401k. Free. 100% return on your money instantly. And the growth is tax deferred. You can invest it. So there's a lot of benefits there. So be aware of that and understand that is huge when it comes to building for your retirement. Next, understand how taxes impact your earnings power. Look it up online. Learn the difference between standard and tax advantage investment products. And when you open a standard brokerage account, your capital gains and dividends will be subject to income tax. And that can be a problem if you're making too much money. So learn about tax deferred programs like an IRA, right, that you can invest in as well if your employer doesn't offer a 401k. Okay, so understand that. And also understand the understand that your salary isn't just your salary. You're going to be paying a lot of taxes, Social Security taxes, etc. It's might come as a shock to some new people that are just entering the workforce. Number three, play to your biggest asset, and that is time. The early years of your investing career are the most important. Any small amount of money you can set aside early on in your career could grow into large sums when allowed to grow for several decades, and the numbers will really amaze you. And because you're young, you can be way more aggressive in your investment strategy if that's your preference, that's your personality. And here's something you're good at. Reading. We have a list of recommended books on our website, investtalk.com. You can take a break and then dig back into the books, and it'll help you make money and make sound investment and financial decisions over the long run. And it's not an empty promise. Now, one more thing. Just like you did in school, you can ask questions and you can start right now. And I'll try to help in any way I can. We'll take a question now from our 24-hour listener line.
Hi, guys. This is Alex. I'm a big fan of the podcast. My question may sound familiar as it relates to an email I sent last week. Anyways, I'm 26 and I've got about $9,000 in Procter & Gamble stock, previously in a custodial account. I have no other holdings or savings, so the PG stock represents pretty much 100% of my portfolio. Needless to say, I am not diversified, so I'm trying to decide what action to take. I'm currently unemployed and I've been traveling for the last several years, currently calling from Argentina. Thus, I have very little earned income, so a Roth or regular IRA are not options. I'm okay with risk, but like you guys, I expect a market correction this summer, so how should I go about diversifying? Thanks a ton for your time, and I'll listen for your response on the podcast. Bye.
All right, it's a great question. He's young. His only real investment asset is this $6,000 in Procter & Gamble stock. And Procter & Gamble's taken a pretty decent hit here since December of last year. Went from 94, hit a low of 76 and change, and now it's at $80.08 at the close of business today. How should he diversify? Well, obviously he needs to diversify. How should you diversify with only $6,000? I think that's a difficult thing to answer, because with $6,000, if making trading a particular issue and trying to get more diversified into individual stocks, well, you're going to pay a lot of commissions, and with $6,000, you're going to eat up a lot of that money quickly by all those commissions. $7, $10 here. That can become a large portion of your portfolio that's costing you to go get in and out of a particular stock. So I would be a little bit worried about that. Procter & Gamble is a good company. It's certainly not going out of business. Could it go down? Sure. I would try to, if you're going to sell some of it, I would diversify into maybe no load, no transaction fee mutual funds. Get some foreign exposure. Get some domestic large cap equity exposure. And you're young. You said you're willing to take a little bit of risk. So staying with equities is fine. What I would probably do is sell half of it. $3,000 in Procter & Gamble is not a big deal. And then as the market pulls back, then you find do some research, find some mutual funds or ETFs that you like, that you want to gain exposure to, and buy it that way. Obviously, ETFs, you're going to pay a commission. A mutual fund, if you find the right one, you shouldn't have to. So, there are pros and cons with them all, but getting diversified is a good idea, but you're young. You should be looking to add to the $6,000 and get more diversified that way, as opposed to diversify with just the $6,000. So first, best thing, I know you're probably trying to do it, find a job so you can do that. It's going to be difficult, that's your number one goal. Hard to diversify with just $6,000. The best way to do that, mutual funds. Now, one of the most important differences between IRAs and 401ks is the level of investment flexibility that each one offers. Three major differences between an IRA and a 401k. That's what we're going to talk about today. Yesterday, we talked about investing in your IRA. Today, we're going to compare them with 401ks. And I also have some other talking points as well. We're going to talk about the Fed movement. I want to talk about the sharing economy, which I didn't get to last show. I want to talk about Greece. How are we going to know if it's going to exit the euro? I think that's certainly a possibility. It's looking as highly likely as it ever has in the past 5 years, ever since the start of the European debt crisis. I don't see them bridging the gap in their differences. Anything is possible because we've been here before, maybe not as contentious as it is now, but we have been kind of to the brink, and now we're right at the brink, and this weekend we're going to have a resolution one way or the other, most likely. So let's talk about what are the ramifications, what will signal that Greece is likely going to exit the euro. Well, what will that look like? And how might that risk spread? What will a contagion be into other asset classes as well? So we're going to touch on those things. And also, nightmare retirement scenario. What happens if you get in a situation where you realize you don't have enough money to retire? There's a great question here and some pretty pointed answers, and I think this is a will be a good lesson for everybody to make sure they plan for retirement, have a plan, not just at retirement, but starting now up into retirement. It has to be a consistent plan going forward, and we're going to talk about that as well. So a lot to talk about on the show today. And a reminder to join our Invest Talk Insider program. Our most recent webinar, Investing Globally, is available to our Invest Talk Insiders. It is free to sign up, and you can do it on investtalk.com. A reminder to join our... I just talked about that. So let's talk about the market today. You had the Fed announcement. It was a pretty big day in the markets. A lot of gyrations. The S&P closed up 4 points. The Dow closed up 31 points. The NASDAQ closed up 9 points. You had small caps were down slightly. It was a really very modest up day on the markets. Market was up early in the morning, sold off in the late morning. Then the Fed announced at about 2 Eastern time, 11 Pacific. And the market rallied, gave back some, then rallied a little bit more. But it really wasn't a big rally. The big rally was actually in commodities. Gold, precious metals did very well, really on the back of a very weak dollar. The dollar was very, very weak, and because the Fed was dovish overall, they lowered their projections for economic growth and unemployment. They increased their projections for unemployment, and so it looks like the Fed is getting more in line with the market, which is, you know, lower for longer, meaning low interest rates for a very long time, and we've said this for a long time, they're backed into a corner. And you know, another reason I think that the market didn't really break out dramatically is Greece. Greece is still weighing on the market overall, and the resolution path to their problems doesn't seem obvious at this point. It seems like it could be very hard for them to resolve that issue, and I could easily see them leaving the euro in the next couple weeks, especially if they don't come to resolution after this weekend. So I think that really weighed on the markets overall. You saw the 10-year interest rate, the 10-year treasury rate, was up in the morning, ended down about 1 basis point. So even though the Fed was dovish and they didn't really talk about pushing interest rates up, and a signal that they were going to push interest rates up at their next Fed meeting that is also accompanied by a press conference, which will be in September. Remember, they have a meeting every about 6 weeks, but every other one they have a press conference after. So the next one will be 6 weeks from now, sometime in July, and that will not have a press conference, and the odds of them raising at that point are very low. And so, because they want to explain it after they do, and so the odds are December, and the odds continue to be pushed back into later dates. And now it was September, and now it looks like it's probably more like December. So that's why gold was up, dollar down, but the market didn't really break out to new highs, which, you know, you'd think it might do that on a more dovish Fed announcement. Now use our free listener line right now and ask your money-related question. I'll try to help. 888-99-CHART is our number. That's 888-992-4278, and you can call right now.
Thanks again for subscribing to our podcast. One of the services InvestTalk provides is a source of answers. And if you'd rather not share your question on the podcast, you can ask privately. Just go to investtalk.com and click on Contact Steve or Contact Justin.
Don't save your questions if you have a question that is about the basics. We're here for you, whether you're an experienced investor or a beginner. 888-99-CHART is the number to call and get your question answered.
Hi, Steve. My question is, with credit being so hard to come by these days, it seems to me that companies that have a lot of cash will be able to buy up smaller companies and things like that, and they'll be well-positioned for recovery. And I was wondering if you knew of a place online where I can do a search to find companies that have a lot of cash on hand. Thank you.
Search online. You know, Morningstar does have a good free tool, or at least good free data about the balance sheet of a company. Let's see. Let's go to the tools real quick. I know we use a premium screener tool that is a little bit more robust, but you have to pay for that. They do have a free screening tool, but I don't think it has. They do. It does have financial health grades. I don't see anything about cash on hand. So I don't know of a great place for that. Morningstar would probably be the best that I can think of. Certainly, you know, a lot of cash on hand is good. They'll be able to weather any economic storms a lot better. But remember, a lot of cash, sometimes is accompanied by a lot of debt as well. I mean, they borrowed a lot of money to get that cash. So just be aware of that. It's always net cash. That's what I want to know. I want net cash. And that's what Apple has. They have, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars net cash after accounting for any debt that they have. So some companies might have a lot of cash, but they also have a lot of debt to service as well. So be aware of that and make sure you balance out the two. Now let's talk about our main talking point today, which is three major differences between an IRA and a 401k. And a lot of people don't know really the differences, or maybe all the differences between the two. And just like I talked about yesterday with an IRA, an IRA and a 401k, they're just account types. They're not investment vehicles. They are account types. And you put investment vehicles, whether it's a stock, a bond, a mutual fund, whatever, in that particular investment account, right? So both offer attractive tax advantages that gives you tax deferral status, meaning you, on any capital gains on that in those investments, you don't have to pay taxes on. Okay, so what are the big differences? Well, the first big difference is contribution limits. If you're under the age of 50, it's $18,000 for a 401k. That does not include the match that your employer puts in. So if $18,000 is, you know, you get to that point with your full employer match and your employer matches 100% of their contributions, you could put in $36,000, right? And then if you're in a IRA, it's only $5,500, and obviously you're not going to have an employer match there. If you're over the age of 50, the limit jumps to $24,000 for a 401k and $6,500 for an IRA. So that's first, is contribution limits. Number two, the biggest difference is the investment flexibility. IRAs, you typically have unlimited options in terms of what investment you can hold in that account: individual stocks, bonds, mutual funds, ETFs, bank products, gold bullion coins, real estate. That gets a little complex, but you can hold a wide variety of assets inside of an IRA. Where a 401k, typically you're limited to the investment choices. Usually a set of mutual funds that employer offers. A lot of times they're not very good mutual funds. But a lot of times they are low-cost mutual funds. At least they should be. If they're not, if there are lower-cost funds out there, lower-cost funds out there available on the platform that you are using or your company's using for your 401k, that could be a big problem. And if there could be a lot of conflicts of interest that go on there, you could actually sue your employer if your fees are too high. So realize that. So a lot of times the mutual funds in a 401k are low cost, lower cost than you can get in a traditional brokerage account, but you have to make sure that is the case, okay? And then IRAs have a few rules that many people take advantage of. For example, you're allowed to withdraw up to $10,000 penalty-free from your IRA to fund a first-time home purchase for you or one of your relatives. You can also withdraw penalty-free from an IRA to cover qualified education expenses for you or your kids. And if your IRA is of the Roth variety, you can always withdraw your original contribution, but not the investment gains. Now, on a 401k, if you are separated from service, meaning you no longer work at the employer after your 55th birthday, you can access the funds in your account penalty-free. Where on an IRA, it's 59 and a half. So there's that 4.5-year gap where if you are no longer with the employer, it's actually better to have that money in a 401k if you're going to tap it. But you really shouldn't be tapping it, right, if you're that young, unless you have a ton of money and you're ready to retire. So bear all those differences in mind and understand the differences. I'm sure you've heard Steve and me talk about moving averages, and when you're scoping out a stock, what are they telling you and how do they work? More about that coming up on InvestTalk 101 right here on InvestTalk, where you can turn for straight talk about your money. Now, InvestTalk is a two-way conversation, but if you have a question between programs, you can still ask us. We will answer it on the next InvestTalk. We're here for you at 888-99-CHART.
Hi, this is Darlene from Vista. I'm wondering about what you think might be an entry for DVD at this point. So, be interested to hear what you have to say about DVD. Thank you very much. Take care. Bye.
All right, she's looking at 3D Systems. 3D Systems is the name of the company. This is a fairly popular 3D printing name, mainly because of its name, 3D Systems Corporation. And there was huge, huge hype around the industry back in 2012, 2013. The stock went from, at the end of 2011, it went from about $10 a share, and it shot up all the way to a high of about $97 a share. Dramatic increase, and since then, it's had a giant fall from grace down to about $20 a share at the close, $20.54 at the close today. So quite the fall from grace, like I said. Where is the entry point? That's an important question. First, I want to just address the industry. It's an industry with a lot of hype, and sure, it has a lot of potential, but it's also an industry that you don't know who the winners are. I get calls about the medical marijuana industry and all these companies and these penny stocks, right? And I'm sure that some will do very well, and some will be a flaming mess and go out of business. And that's same with the 3D arena. I think they're very similar in the fact that you don't really know who's actually going to come out on top. And the speculation always was that 3D Systems was going to be one of the leaders. And the fundamentals got far, far away from reality. Back in 2013, when it was trading at $97 a share, like I said, it was making 85 cents a share, over 100 PE ratio. It just didn't make sense. And now what you're seeing is that revenue growth is slowing, earnings growth is slowing, and actually negative. Earnings are falling 21% this year to 55 cents a share. So let's go up 60% next year, but I don't have a lot of confidence in that. So the big question is, why do you want to buy this stock? And is it a good time yet? Certainly, it has some value, but things need to start turning around, and they need to start turning around quickly. So where is that buy point is the big question. I would say back at 10 bucks. I think 10 bucks is that buy point. Certainly here around 20 is a possibility. But what I want to see is capitulation. And when I say capitulation, is volume. I want to see a giant volume day, meaning over 10 million shares traded in one day. And it's probably going to be in a big swoosh lower. And after a long, drawn-out drop in a stock like this, that usually marks the bottom, is, and the same thing on the other way, a big spike in volume on the upside. So understand that this is a name that is still very risky. It's certainly a much cheaper name, a much better value name than it was just a couple of years ago. And I like that you're looking for a bottom in this name, and I think it's close to a bottom time-wise, but price-wise, I think it still could go down another 50% before you get that bottom. But what you want to look for is a big spike in volume, 10 million shares plus on this name, and then that's my buy signal to be buying Triple D, 3D Systems. Now let's talk a little bit about the Fed. The Fed announcement was today, started yesterday, they came out with the announcement today. Now let's talk a little about what they did. Well, first they signaled that they are moving towards interest rate increase in the coming months by year end. And they said that the economy is moving along at a moderate pace, expanding moderately is how they explained it. But the path of rate increases will be less steep than officials anticipated before. Now, 15 of the 17 Fed officials said that they expect to start raising short-term interest rates before the end of 2015. And that's a difference because in March, every Fed official thought that they were going to raise interest rates sometime in 2015. So now a couple of them are pushing that off into 2016. That's after the IMF is encouraging them, or officially came out publicly encouraging the Fed to wait until 2016 to start raising interest rates. They also nudged down their rate projections for 2016 and 2017 by a quarter percentage point on average. What else? They pointed to a moderate pickup in consumer spending and some improvements in the housing market. So, like I said, two officials don't want to move rates at all this year. Five officials, on the other hand, want to move rates up by a quarter percentage point, and another five want to move it up by half a percentage point by the end of the year. Now, in March, only one official saw a quarter percentage point increase this year, and seven saw half a percentage point rise. So they're becoming more dovish, and this is consistent. They're very consistent in this. Every single meeting, on average, the Fed officials push off interest rate raises a little bit farther and a little bit farther. Now, the median estimate for rate rises in 2016 has shifted down to 1.625% on average for the year, or sorry, for the end of the year, from 1.875 in March. Okay, so that's what they're expecting it to be. Over 1.5%, the Fed funds rate, by the end of next year. Now, the median estimate for 2017 also shifted down to 2.875 from 3.125 back in March. So by the end of 2017, they expected to be in the high 2% range. I think this is wildly optimistic. I think by the end of the year, they could be at a 25 basis point rise. I think it's extremely unrealistic that they're going to be at 50 basis points by the end of the year, or raise at 50 basis points, meaning 75 basis points by the end of the year. I don't think they're going to get to a 1.5% by the end of next year, and I would be shocked if they get to 2% by the end of 2017. So I think you're going to see this consistency of the Fed being more dovish each and every meeting, slowly and steadily, because they don't want to scare the markets. They want to make sure that the markets realize that the pace of rate increases is going to be mild and very measured. And then they also came out with their estimated growth for GDP this year. And in March, the Fed saw the economy expanding by 2.3 to 2.7% in 2015. Now, it's been revised down all the way down to 1.8 to 2%. So they think best case scenario, we expand at 2% in 2015. And that's a very hard scenario for me to envision them raising interest rates much at all. And that's why I say odds of them raising it 50 basis points are almost nil. They also nudged up their unemployment forecast for the year. So, and they always talk about the labor market. So they have less, they're less bullish on the labor market as well. Now they kept their inflation forecast largely in line, but you know, the expectations for rate increases is even more dovish than it was before, meaning a slower pace, and economic expansion is also expected to be much less. And this is just a continuation. The Fed is always wrong. They've continued wrong for the last 5-6 years on the pace of economic expansion. You look at their projections, you know, a year, 2 years past when they released that that number, they always downgrade their projections for economic growth. They're terrible at predicting economic growth, which is very interesting, I think. And so just be aware of that. And that's why gold was up, and why the dollar is weaker, because the Fed's going to take its time on raising interest rates. Time for InvestTalk 101, moving averages. Now, Investopedia defines moving averages this way: a widely used indicator in technical analysis that helps smooth out price action by filtering out the noise from random price fluctuations. Now you have to define a moving average as a lagging indicator. That's because it's based on past prices. Remember that. It's a good indication of the overall trend. And it's... whether it's pointing up or pointing down is a good indication of where that particular issue, you know, index or stock or interest rates or whatever, where it's been in the past. And you know, the trend generally is your friend, but it can turn. And depending on which moving average you're talking about, it is more important than others. You know, 20-day moving average moves frequently because that's just 20 days of average price, and you know, one big move can really influence that moving average. Whereas, you know, think about a 200-day moving average, you're talking about almost a year worth of prices, average of it, and you can see the slope, whether it's moving up, moving down, whether momentum is weakening, things like that. That's important as well. So the longer the moving average, the more important it is. The three most important are the 100-day, 200-day, and 50-day. Those are the three most important moving averages. And technical analysis is an important factor that any investor should understand, at least the basics, maybe not the intricacies of it, but the basics. And history tells me that the more you know, the better of an investor you will be, so you understand how to trade and how to understand the price trajectory of all asset classes. Okay. Now, do you have a question about moving averages? Get in touch. We're here right now at 888-99-CHART, or you can write me a note. You can click on the Contact Justin button on investtalk.com.
When you're an InvestTalk insider, you have new opportunities to learn with concise, simplified reports written personally by Steve and Justin on important topics: annuities, wills and trusts, retirement programs, life insurance. You can sign up. It's free on investtalk.com.
This is Paul from Sydney, Australia. I listen via podcast. And the question I have is regarding Hasbro, HAS. And just wondering if it's a stock you would recommend buying or you think worth buying. And also what a fair price for it would be. Thanks.
All right, he's looking at Hasbro. This is a toy maker. They manufacture traditional and high-tech toys, games, interactive products sold worldwide. Their revenue is growing mid-single digits on average over the past couple of years. Decent amount of debt, pays 2.5% dividend. P ratio is 22, a little high for this name. Profitability is increasing, and that's really what you've seen recently, why the stock has surged from beginning of the year when it was trading around $55 a share all the way up to almost $75 a share now. I would want to see a pullback. Mid-60s would be a great place for me to add to this or buy this name. I think it's a little bit overvalued now, not dramatically, but a little bit overvalued, overbought, certainly in the weekly chart. I want to see a little bit of pullback, like I said, into the mid-60s as opposed to being the mid-70s now. Now, it's certainly a momentum name. You could ride it for momentum if you are looking just for a trade and to ride it for the next month or two or three. You know, this could possibly be a name that where the momentum continues. I do think that it is getting a lot of movement. I think it's because of, I'm trying to remember, I think they're getting a lot of business momentum because of Frozen, the Disney movie. I believe a lot of their products are flying off the shelves because of that. And they do have a technological bent, which is good. They have Transformers brand, My Little Pony, Nerf. So they have a pretty diversified business, and that's good. And I think it is a good company to have in your watch list. Is this the time to pick it up? I think you missed the boat a little bit in the medium term. I would look for a pullback if you are looking to own this over the long term. That was Hasbro. H-A-S is the symbol. Now I want to talk a little bit about the sharing economy. And it's really disrupting a lot of business models. And major industries like hotels and cars, think of Uber, think of Airbnb, and it's really disrupting a lot of economic models, traditional economic models, analyzing U.S. data. And it's really muddled the existing measurements like employment status, labor force participation, and wages earned. What are the implications for capital expenditures, GDP accounting? Those are all, I think, going to need to be tweaked with the new sharing economy because a lot of the activity now is harder to track. So after the break, I want to talk a little bit more about this because I think it's interesting to think about. And we only have about 8 minutes left in the show to get your call in. So if you want to talk about this or anything else money related, the broader the question, the better. Give us a call. 888-99-CHART is how to reach us with any money questions on InvestTalk.
Our podcast distribution, as always, made possible each day by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President. And there are good reasons for retirees to manage their own financial lives, but there is dangerous ground along the way. The risks and rewards of self-managing investment portfolios. That's a key topic on Thursday, June 18th's InvestTalk, and we hope you'll join us then.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. We have about 5 minutes left in the show, and so give us a call if you have any questions. Now, I want to talk a little about the sharing economy, and I think there's a lot of interesting things going on with, you know, the likes of Uber and Airbnb and so many other types of businesses that are sprouting up to service people on demand. And I think the most important aspect of it is that it's starting to repurpose existing assets that are previously were exclusively for personal use for on-demand services. And think of a car, right? You own a car. And you're an Uber driver. You use that car for your everyday life, but you also use it as an Uber driver. And that is hurting a lot of taxi cab drivers, right? But think of if Uber now replaces all taxis, which I think years down the line it eventually will. Think of all the lack of a need for those taxis and that type of asset that is only used for business purposes. So now an asset that was before just exclusively for personal use is now a dual purpose asset. And that goes for, you know, the hotel industry as well with Airbnb. You know, people that have a second home, a vacation home, now they can use Airbnb and rent that out. And before it was exclusively a an asset that was for themselves and their friends and family, and now they can repurpose it for other people to make more money, and those people are now using other people's homes that were sitting empty or not being used, and before they would go to a hotel, and now they're using a home. So there's going to be less demand for hotels as well. So the overlap between consumer and business goods suddenly is increasing, and it's going to only continue. And I think this is going to be very interesting to see how these dynamics play out, and it disrupts various industries. And in a sense, all this sharing reveals we are wealthier than we thought. And it's actually an upward shock to our economically productive capital stock. And on the other hand, we may need to invest, build, and buy and grow. We may not need to, you know, do these things as quickly as we used to under the current, you know, way we measure GDP, right? If I go out and I'm using Airbnb to rent out my second home, and someone else is using my asset, is that getting recorded in the GDP figure? Probably not. But if that person went and used the hotel, and you know they're employing more workers and using that asset, and that money is, and they're paying taxes on that, that's being recorded now. So this is really going to be interesting to see how this plays out over the long term. And the rise of the sharing economy really can be changing things. And it might be just at the margins. You know, and this is one example of why I think that the Fed is so behind in what they're doing. Right now, you know, the sharing economy is very minor. And really, it's the start of the globalization. Globalization has pushed down prices for so many things. And that's why their focus on inflation is totally misguided. Because it's not, our inflation rate's not the traditional measure of inflation. It's so much more dynamic in today's world than it was 30 or 40 years ago. And that's only increasing with the sharing economy. And so it's something I think everybody needs to understand. And one of the reasons why I think the Fed is majorly missing the ball, they're way behind the times, and they're causing a lot of economic distortion that they shouldn't otherwise be doing if they understood the dynamics of globalization, of the sharing economy, of everything becoming more efficient. And economists need to appreciate this. And it's a good thing. Our economy is becoming more efficient. So I think it's something that needs to be discussed, not just here on InvestTalk, but throughout the nation, for our politicians, and globally as well. Now it's time to wrap it up for the day. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein. Glad you can join us. Now for Steve Peasley and everyone at KP Financial, we thank you for listening. We hope you have a good evening. Steve will be back with you tomorrow, and I hope you join him.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.